Gang, we all know Spotify as the best and most popular music streaming app. They have millions of songs by millions of artists available at your fingertips. But did you know that aside from millions of songs by millions of artists, Spotify also has thousands of podcasts? All of your favorites on there. The Truth About Pam, Fresh Air, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and yes, How Did I Get Here is available on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, now thousands of podcasts. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. Had a good weekend, got back to work with Skyrocket, went down to Houston Friday to play someone's birthday party, I guess. It was like three family members' birthday party in one family. They had it at this place. The show was a little bit longer than what we've been playing lately, which was a little bit of a shock to the body. It was like 1 hour longer than we've been playing normally over the last couple of months. And I kind of felt that hour as it was happening, and I think that the hour kind of kicked my ass because we came back Saturday and played in Pflugerville at Hanover's. That was fun. There was a whole lot of people there. It was very, very crowded. The crowd was really good. It was a very engaged crowd, very fun crowd. But I woke up on Sunday, and I'd been drinking. You know, I had a couple drinks on Saturday night, but nothing that would make me feel bad the next day. I felt on Sunday when I woke up like I had been put in a dryer the night before. I mean, my body was like beaten. And I exercise on a pretty regular basis, man. I've been trying to walk like 25 miles a week. Like, you know, 5 miles a day, 5 days a week if I can. I generally can do it. I started off this week. It's Monday right now. I walked a little over 5 miles today, so that's good. I feel normal today, but I was wiped out on Sunday. Wiped out. And I had a podcast with this really great guy from American Dreamer, Sasha K.A. You'll hear that next Tuesday. He came over, and he was so nice. It was like Sunday afternoon, so he brought like a bottle of wine. Like, hey, man, let's have a glass of wine and chat. And I was like, man, if I have that wine, dude, I'm going to take a nap, and you're just going to have to talk about yourself for an hour. Wake me up when it's over. So I did not partake in the wine. Wine makes me tired. I was already tired. So I drank coffee. He drank wine, and we had a great conversation. Anyway, South by Southwest is coming up, and I've got some pretty exciting stuff to talk about. I can't really say everyone that's doing it because it's not finalized or booked, but I will be partnering with Clubhouse Austin, a studio here owned by my dear old friend David Rice, and I'll be doing some podcasts out there because he's going to be doing some showcases. He's got people coming in from all over the world. He's even got Soul Asylum and the Posies, but I can almost guarantee that I can't do them because I'm leaving Friday to do a show in Dallas and then playing a show in San Antonio on Saturday. So, of that week, of that South by Southwest week. So I'll be missing the Posies and Soul Asylum, sadly. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to try and talk to Ken Stringfellow and see if we can talk before Saturday. He's been on the show a couple times. He's a great dude. But anyway, I'm looking forward to South by Southwest. I'll let you know who all I get to talk to, who all books, and I'll be doing them out there. So they'll be kind of remote. So I'm kind of excited about this. I didn't do much last year for South by Southwest, and I haven't planned on doing much this year. I reached out to a couple of bands that were coming to town that I thought were interesting, but I haven't heard back from them yet. And so I'm looking forward to doing this thing with Clubhouse Austin. Looking forward to it, and I'll let you know all about it when it happens. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Alex Marrero and Beto Martinez from the band Brownout are here. They have a brand new album called Berlin Sessions. It drops Friday, March 6th, this Friday. It was produced by Steve Berlin. It's the first full-length album that they have, like, singing with Alex Marrero on it. That's not one of the Brown Sabbath albums or something. It is absolutely fantastic, man. This album's great. Alex brought it by about a month ago. He brought by the vinyl. It's going to be available on vinyl, so go to brownoutmusic.com and check it out. But the record's fucking great. You can hear two of the singles that are out right now, one called Nain that I will play in a minute that just came out a couple weeks ago or a week ago or something, and the song Somewhere to Go, which dropped in January. Go check those out right now. You can find them at brownoutmusic.com. They're celebrating with release shows this Friday, March 6th, and Saturday, March 7th at 310 ACL Live. So go to brownoutmusic.com, get involved with that. They're also doing an in-store at Waterloo Records Thursday, March 5th at 5:30 p.m. if you're into those Waterloo things. I am. I like going in there and checking them out, seeing them. Short set. You hang out. You usually run into people you know. You maybe pick up an album or something. Say hi to the band. I'm sure they'll be there signing them. I always feel weird trying to go up and get my friends to sign them, but maybe I'll bring the one I got and have him sign it. Who knows? I'm weird like that. Anyway, Alex has been a great addition to this band, I think. And I love Brownout. And they come from that family that was spawned by Grupo Fantasma, that spawned bands like Money Chicha, Brownout, Brown Sabbath. So many bands, including Adrian Quesada's band, Black Pumas, who were Grammy nominated. Anyway, Beto Martinez and Alex Marrero and I have a great conversation about making the record and working with the great producer Steve Berlin from Los Lobos. Berlin Sessions drops Friday, March 6th. Find them at Brownout Music, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with these two amazingly talented musicians, Beto Martinez and Alex Marrero from Brownout. Let's get down. So I set it off mic, but now I'll bring it back up again. Great album.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I went back and listened to the Over the Covers EP too, because is that the first thing that you guys did that was original music together?
It's the first, yeah, it's the first batch of songs that I did with them on, that I was singing, that wasn't Sabbath, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you guys, there's so many steps you guys take. You know what I mean? Like, artistically and musically, it's kind of like your trajectory isn't really, like, you can't really project it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you guys are,
right.
Artistically, you're on a trajectory that I don't know what's going to happen.
It's,
which is great.
I don't either.
I mean, that's a great thing.
There's a lot of dudes on this, yeah. This walk.
Well, that's another thing. It's like, man, in a creative situation with nine people, how do you do these? How do you write these songs?
Well, this particular record started out, with like other Brownout records initially, where all the previous Brownout records, other than the Sabbath stuff, it was me, Adrian Quesada, and Greg Gonzalez were the songwriters,
right?
And we'd each write our own songs and then bring them in and sort of collaborate maybe with our horn arranger to kind of put the horns on them and stuff. But now with Alex, we decided to bring in our demos a little less finished, and the initial sessions, which were for an EP, was just kind of getting I think six songs down, and we went in with these partially finished songs and brought Alex in to add the whole vocal element. And then actually handed them over to both him and Speedy, the horn arranger, to add their parts. So the songs were pretty unfinished, and we did that on purpose in order to kind of force a collaboration.
How did that go? Obviously, you ended up with more songs than you...
Well, we ended up, because Steve Berlin, who produced the record, came in for those original sessions, right? That was the whole idea, is to keep it kind of loose.
Right.
And maybe write some stuff on the floor. But then that just kind of evolved as the demos came in, and we did the first batch of songs, and I think everybody felt like we were kind of accomplishing something good. So it's like, well, let's just keep going, right? He came back for like how long, like a month later or something?
Yeah, the second session was like a month later, and we knocked out another like 7 or 8 songs, yeah, something like that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What did he bring to the table this time? Man, is this the first time that you guys had someone outside of the band producing Brownout?
For Brownout, yeah. Yeah, Steve actually, you know, Steve has a great ear for sounds, and he's like a, as far as with producers that I've worked with, he's super hands-on with like guitar tones and effects on different stuff. And we'll sit down and like just tweak all those details. And then he's really good, I think, with just like subtle suggestions, like rhythmically and stuff, that can really help shape the tunes. And because we had these demos kind of unfinished, it really helped a lot with the arrangements and stuff, what he brought in. And then, like I said, sonically, with just his ear for all the tonality of all the instruments and stuff like that, it really helped.
Yeah, the guitars on there are awesome, and the horns are awesome, and your singing is amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much.
Who
is the guy that sings the first song on side two, the You've Gotta Change, Anthony Farrell?
That's Anthony Farrell, yeah, from the Greyhounds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
where I know that,
yeah,
name
he's
from.
One of
sorry.
My favorite
singers. Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah. I put myself out of that one accidentally because we were looking for someone to play keys.
Right.
And I was at home. I was like, oh, Anthony should play keys. And I sent a text. And as soon as I sent send on that text, I was like, wait a minute. He should be singing it too. So I sent another text. And the band responded right. I was like, oh yeah, we already decided that.
Yeah.
So I was out of that one, and he's so good. He did that in like 2 takes or something. He was super fast. He's awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny because he showed up and pretended like he didn't know he was going to sing it. Like he laid down the keys, and then he's like, "Well, what else do you want to do? You want to work on something else?" And we were like, "Well, why don't you try the vocals?" And he's like, "Oh man, I didn't really like think about that. Like I don't know. Y'all want, like really want me to sing it?" We were like, yeah, man, give
and
it a
shot.
And
that's 2 takes.
And then he nailed it. Yeah,
he's bad like that.
Were you there for that?
I was.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It was great.
You're pretty selfless. I think the whole organization, like you guys have such an open sort of like marriage is in your band. Like you're cool. Like, hey, yeah, I mean, you guys can bring another lady in tonight. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a real sense of community and there's not a lot of ego, you know.
No.
It's about the music, and if someone can accomplish something better, then go for it. It's about the end result, not about you personally. At least that's how I look at it.
Yeah. That's funny because I just had Fastball in here, and they just did their latest record with Steve Berlin, mm-hmm, as well.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a couple of songs on there that don't feature all of Fastball. It's just one of the dudes. And his thing was like, man, why re-record something that's already good just to have the, you know what I mean?
Just because you want to have your name
do
on it?
Do the best thing for the record,
totally.
Yeah.
It's about the song and the outcome, right?
Yeah, yeah. That whole like spirit of collaboration, I think, has, it's something that's become a real theme for us with all of our bands over the last few years, because it wasn't always like that. We used to, like, the songwriters would write their songs and bring them in pretty much finished, and then, mm-hmm, just the band would learn them. But for the last few records, starting with the last record we did with Fantasma and then moving into this Brownout stuff, we really made that conscious choice to bring more people in, even if it's outside people, and just start to collaborate.
Yeah. Well, also that keeps it because you guys have been together. I mean, the core group has been together for so long. Yeah.
Yeah.
That it kind of is nice to bring in fresh blood and fresh creative elements.
Yeah, that's true.
So what, they would just give you the music and you would go home and sing? And
for the most, yeah, not for the most part, that's exactly how it happened, but I would be at the studio most of 99% of the time. I'd be there because I wanted to see how the things were fleshing out, and it was great to watch Steve produce in the way he does. He's very hands-on, and just I wanted to get a feel for what how the vibe was in the room, and then I'd make notes. And then I'd take the rough the rough mix. They'd send me the rough mix. And then that night or, you know, those subsequent days, I'd work on it at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of it, it's always challenging to work that way. I mean, writing songs is challenging no matter what, as you know. So it's an interesting thing to work on a piece of music that pretty much exists.
It's structured.
It's already, yeah, like, this is this. And there's, I mean, there's times where I could, like, oh, maybe we should do this or that. But yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to be there, because if there was going to be something that I heard, I wanted to be able to say it on the spot.
Right, right.
Not that I don't think it happened very often. At least that's what was going in my mind.
Right. Well, I have those kind of tunes too, where I'll record a whole track, like everything, and then write lyrics and a melody over that.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's more inspiring.
It's a cool way to write, for sure, because you're coming at it like from a super external perspective, and yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy the process. Some were more difficult than others, and some I had to dig deep for sources of inspiration within myself and the outside world.
Yeah. Well, the whole lead singer thing for Brownout is something new.
Yeah.
So it also, just for us who were writing the initial sort of song structures, it was a challenge too, to just kind of be thinking about him, like, okay, we need to leave some space here for him to do something on top of this.
Yeah, no shit.
So, yeah.
That's a huge thing. Can I ask you a question? Did you guys record on the 388 for this?
Did.
Yeah, nice, baby.
Yeah, what's really funny is that, the record that we did before was the Public Enemy record,
right?
Fear of a Brown Planet. And Adrian, who's a huge Public Enemy fan, right away when we got approached for that, was like, I want to record that, and let's do it at my place. And so you're like, yeah, man, of course. Like, he has a real knowledge and background with that music. So he tracked that for the most part. I think I tracked the horns. But afterwards, we decided to do this record, and basically I said, hey, can I do this one? Like, can I have the opportunity to track this one, since we just did this one at your place? I'd like to give this a shot. And everybody said, all right. We talked to Steve, and Steve was like, okay, we're tracking at your place. Steve flies in. I bring him to my house. He's like, can we see the studio? I was a little apprehensive because it's nothing fancy.
Right. That's right.
Wait. Yeah, because there's nothing fancy. So I'm like, all right, I'm, you know, about to bring him in to check it out. And right before we walked in, he's like, man, it'd be great if we had something like a 388, like something to just get an interesting sound. And he like walked in, and I was like, it's exactly what we have here.
Amazing.
And he's like, wow, awesome, this is perfect. He's like, yeah, this is going to work. This is going to be great. You know.
Can I ask you a weird technical question? I don't know if I asked you this last time you were on here, but do you work on it yourself? Or do you have a guy?
No, I've never worked on it other than, you know, cleaning the heads and stuff like that.
Right.
No, when I bought it, it needed a little bit of work, and I took it in to Switched On, and it took like 6 months to get back, but it's been tip top since, you know, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been working great. So.
Amazing. Was there any fear of that?
What, in of that, it breaking down or something?
Yeah, like, oh, here's Steve Berlin, you guys start cutting the first tune and
yes.
You know what I
mean? No, there's always that fear, man. I mean, especially with vintage gear, there's always the fear that something's going to break. And it's happened. Like, I've had like the Space Echo crap out or whatever, but I just bought it from Greg Gonzalez, a bass player, but he had, and he brought it to the sessions just as a backup. There's another Tascam mixer, which is the same thing without the tape machine, basically.
Okay.
It's like the 312B or something like that.
Has those same colors.
Yeah. It's like the same exact thing, just doesn't have the tape part. So we had that there as a standby.
Okay, cool. Oh, yeah, because you can still run it through.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, because the preamps are pretty nice on this.
Yeah, they're not bad at all.
I mean, no. Are you a fan of that? Did you start recording, like, did you record on, like, a four-track cassette or anything like that?
Not very well. I mean, I did do that. I remember I would rent some from, like, Rock and Roll Rentals back in the day.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of tapes of old stuff that I did. But I never followed through with kind of, I mean, I have a basic older Pro Tools setup in my house that I use just for basic, I mean, for the voiceover stuff that I do at home and just for basic writing. But I have a long way to go as far as
engineering.
Yeah, I'm terrible at it. Just terrible.
Huh. Do you agree?
Well, I've never seen him, you know, honestly. So.
And that's why.
Yeah.
How did you guys, when did you first hear of these guys? Like, was it in Grupo? And did you know them then?
Brownout?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because we all go way back. So, because I was in Grupo for a minute back in the day before Jose came in. And then
what were you doing there?
I came in to play percussion.
Okay.
Poorly for about 2 weeks.
Okay. What year was that?
2001.
Yeah, it was like 2000, 2001. He's actually, you're on the cover, right?
I'm on the back cover, yeah, of the first Fantasma record.
Okay. We played at Stubbs.
Opening for Los Lobos.
Opening for Los Lobos. That was
where I got to jam with Los Lobos.
Oh, nice.
On percussion, that gig. Yeah, it was great. So to answer your question, yeah, that was the connection. I remember when, because I had Gandaya at the time, and I remember, I'm pretty sure it was like a residency at the Whiskey Bar you guys were doing, or you guys would play there a lot early on.
Yeah, we had a residency there.
And that's when I first saw Brownout, and they were doing just a lot of breakbeat stuff and just, you know, instrumental funk.
Yeah, a lot of JBs.
And yeah, it was great. So yeah. I loved it from the get.
Yeah. What was the... you guys did got into doing the Brown Sabbath by doing the tribute shows at Frank, right?
Yeah, at Frank.
Exactly. Okay, because I remember, I think you told me the story of how that went down.
Yeah, they had a whole month and they were doing a different theme each week.
What were the different themes you did?
So we did, one was actually Fear of a Brown Planet, which was like a hip-hop night that we did. It wasn't like Public Enemy theme, but it was a hip-hop thing. And we did... Brownout 2 Electric Boogaloo, which was all like breakbeat and breakdancing stuff.
Yeah.
And we did Brown Caesar, which was the James Brown Black Caesar album. Uh-huh. We just did it as Brownout with a few different singers. Nakia was on that.
Okay.
And then the last one was Brown Sabbath, which was a concept that had been sitting around for a while that we finally acted on for those shows.
I still like, I have the first album on vinyl. Like, I still like, there's people that I'll be like, oh, have you ever heard this? And I'll tell them about it and I'll listen to them. It's like, it's so weird because it's the last fucking thing you would think of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like the Reese's peanut butter cup. It goes so well together. You know what I mean? It's amazing. I actually just came up. I wasn't working on that Reese's peanut butter cup thing at all. I just came up with that. So.
Trademark.
But you know what I mean? I mean, it really, obviously it hit a chord with people, and it gave you guys a new avenue to go down. Mm-hmm. But then you had to shut that avenue down.
Yeah, it became a heavily traveled avenue, and one that you know, people wanted us to continue traveling down.
Sure,
they still want us to.
It's easy to package.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's people just. It's always like the simplest thing you do.
Yeah.
Is it the elevator pitch is super easy for it. It's like psychedelic Latin music doing Black Sabbath. What else do you need?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that was great, and it was a lot of fun, and to like ultimately have Ozzy come out and say
right
how much he liked it and how it sounded like it wasn't forced and it just sounded like it had always been that
yeah.
way. That's the ultimate compliment, and really I don't know where you go from there with it. You know what I mean? Like, we basically made it to where it should have been, I guess, and
right.
got to the people should have gotten to.
Yeah, I love that band. What's that? The end. Yeah. And then when you did Over the Covers, did you guys tour some?
Not extensively. Get out. I mean, did we go out?
Well, what happened was we did Over the Covers and then the Public Enemy thing.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
Then we got commissioned right. to do that right away.
And by Fat Beats.
By okay. Fat Beats. So, okay. Yeah, that started the collaboration with Fat Beats, who's now putting out this new record.
Right.
And they also put out Over the Covers.
Correct.
Right.
So I think what happened, if I remember this correctly, was that we finished Over the Covers, and then they came out with the Public Enemy thing, and we ended up recording... And I think putting out the Public Enemy thing
and then first. Touring that, yeah. No, yeah. not first. No. We put out Over the Covers. We had those two nights at Antone's that we did.
Okay.
We put yeah, it out, but right. I don't think we really hit the road until the Public Enemy record came out. Then we did
and we toured that.
Yeah, we did tour that.
Also doing some of those songs mixed in. We were kind of doing like a set of Brownout stuff and then the Public Enemy set.
I mean, that's afterwards. How it started. That's how we've kind of started to blend those two worlds. It's like when you see the band now, it's like a trajectory of, because I can be on the side and play percussion,
right?
And then I'll go to the middle, and you know, it seems like it, to me anyway. It seems like a natural ebb and flow to maintain the history of the band
right.
as an instrumental entity
which, right.
with great material, and also interject the new stuff with vocals and create a balance with that. So that's kind of, we're honing in on that much more closely now, I think.
Yeah. And you guys are doing two nights at 310 for this, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, we are.
That'll be great.
Yeah, we're looking forward
March
to it.
6th and 7th.
Yeah, and you got Superfónicos one night.
We got Nané one night and Superfónicos the next. Second night.
Yeah. And you worked with Superfónicos, right?
I recorded their first EP. Okay. Most of it. There's like two songs that they did with Adrian.
Okay. Yeah. Adrian did a couple of tunes on this, right? Or worked on some of it? You guys did some recording there?
So we did the majority of the tracking at my place. There were a couple days in there, like 3 days of overdubs that we did with Adrian just because of the scheduling or whatever. It's how it worked out.
Yeah.
I think I did one vocal tune at Adrian's place and maybe some horns or something.
And I did some guitar overdubs there too. Yeah.
Did he play some on it? He's credited.
He did. Yeah. This whole thing, he actually initiated the idea of doing an EP with Steve Berlin. He was like, hey, I think we should get an outside producer and the follow-up to all this Sabbath stuff and whatever, we should do this. So he was fully invested at first, and then he started, it was like after those first two main sessions, I think it's when he started recording
Black Pumas.
Black Pumas.
Cover project.
Dude, I can see it already. Brown Pumas.
Yeah, so then he kind of sidetracked there a bit, but he's totally on the record.
No, he's on the record. Yeah. He's part of the band on the record, and it's just, that was the beginning of the Black Pumas thing, is right in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I freaked out. He's in the new Rolling Stone.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're in the new Rolling Stone.
Yeah, they're all over the place. Nice. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full two-page photo.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, pretty, almost life-size.
Conquering the world. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an exciting...
it's amazing to watch.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It's... It's also like interesting that this band was birthed from the fountain of Grupo Fantasma.
Yeah, that's true.
And what was this the first band to come out of it?
Yeah, because it was a response to basically Fantasma like got really busy really quick.
Yeah,
and we were touring a whole bunch doing all this Latin music, but. What we did before Fantasma, the collaborations we were doing and our bands before that were more funk based.
Right, yeah. Right.
So we wanted to go back to that. So in 2003, we put this project together and it was all covers, but all these obscure like breakbeat and old JB stuff. And we did a show at the Parish or something with the first sort of formation of the band. And then the idea was just to have that outlet whenever we weren't touring with Fantasma, which is why it took so long to finally put a record out, which Brown and I started playing in 2003. Our first record was 2008.
Right. Like 5 years
long,
later.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I checked out that record today. There's a lot of material you guys have put out as this band, you know?
Yeah, there's a definite evolution too. I mean, that record has a special place, I think, for all of us.
The first one?
Yeah, that first one. Because it sort of like defined our sound for a long time.
Is that Homenaje?
Yeah, it's Homenaje. Yeah. And there was like just real energy behind it. There wasn't a lot of thought. There weren't record labels. There wasn't a tour. There was just like no management, whatever. It was just like...
Right.
Like having a ton of fun making this music that we love.
That's what I feel like you guys do. I feel like that every time that something is really taking off, you need something to blow off steam with in the gallery at Continental Club or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like Money Chicha came out like that, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
Brownout was exploding, and then you could go see you guys on, I can't even remember what night it was, but I did go.
It was on Monday nights.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it after Eli? Yeah.
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 Exactly.
Amazing. So what are the plans for 2020? You're doing some other shows. I saw you're going to Mississippi, but this will come out after that trip to Mississippi and New Orleans or something?
Yeah. We're doing a short run out there, just like a long weekend, basically. And then we're lining up stuff for the summer. We have a couple little fests in the Northwest that we're trying to build around. And it's always tough with this band, with all the scheduling. Because everybody does a whole bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's 9 people.
Exactly.
Is there an abbreviated version of... You can't do it without the horns.
I don't know.
That's always been...
It'd be weird if it was a synth horns guy.
Well, yeah, that's always been a big question with us. People have asked us that all the time. Like, well, couldn't you just do a smaller band? But I think it would really just compromise the sound.
But that's Money Chicha then, right?
Yeah, then it'd be Money Chicha or something. I mean, I just feel like it'd be something different at that point. I mean, we're facing some realities as we come into our 20th year as Fantasma, 17th year as Brownout, where, you know, people have just have a lot of different priorities at this point, and we may have to move forward, at least in some capacity, like with a slightly different group, just because of necessity. And that's something that we'll just have to kind of experiment with as we go. But
yeah. Do you ever get freaked out? Because you guys seem to handle it kind of cool. Is it that cool all the time?
It's just like anything.
Yeah.
You know? Problems arise, you tackle them, and you move on. You know, the focus right now is we were really excited about this record, and we just wanted to put it out. So the fact that we're sitting here talking to you about it, to me, is an achievement. The fact that I can look at that cover and be like, there it is. Okay, there's forward motion. There's always there's always limitations, and there's always frustrations. It's just, it's the natural part of this business.
Yeah.
But I see, it's like, let's put this out into the world and see what happens. I mean, I'm not expecting any super mega things, but just expand the breadth of the band and explore the new sound with vocals and, you know, just keep pushing forward and being creative. That's really what it's about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's an evolution. And we're excited about it. A little apprehensive, but so far we've been getting some really great feedback. And, you know, the song that ended up being the lead off,
the single, yeah.
That first single was like, for us, we were like, this is a super weird song.
Yeah,
totally. I don't know how people are going to take this.
I love it.
But
and it got on a playlist that it's got a lot of plays.
Yeah, I thought it. It's, again, you don't see things the way other people see them.
Right.
When you're so close to it, you see all of its, however, your filter sees it. Like, we wrote that song, and we're like, this is weird as fuck. But I like it.
Yeah.
So, there must be someone else.
You open the album with it. I also like an album that starts off with a cool drum fill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's always important. Did you have this, Rilke Roca did this... Is that what, am I saying
Rilke,
it right?
Rilke Roca.
Rilke Roca.
I met him. I was in Mexico City with some friends, and we went to this party. There was this really unique collective in Mexico City called the Moy Collective. Super creative environment, and they would have these kind of invite-only parties. And we went to one. It was actually, we were down there for a friend, John Branch's kind of bachelor party trip. He just wanted to go to Mexico City. Mm. I've known him for a long time. Adrian was there. Troub from the Greyhounds. A bunch of us went down there and just had fun in Mexico City. And we went to this party, and Rilke was there. And he's a muralist. And he had painted these murals in this building where they would host these parties. And I saw that, and I immediately, because we were working on the record at the time, and the thought was like, this guy would create a badass cover. Like, I could picture like the vinyl in my head. Like, this guy could come up with something really cool. And he and I hit it off. We spent like over an hour just shooting the shit that night. Yeah. And I kept in contact with him because I knew I would want him to work on it.
Yeah.
And when finally the time came, I reached out to him, and I think the results are amazing. He's a super, super talented artist, muralist, and super professional, really easy to work with.
And he did this specifically for the album.
It's a custom,
awesome.
Custom
That's
art
awesome.
Piece. Yes.
So in a band that big, there definitely has to be some sort of delegation of like, everyone can't do everything all the time. So was that your kind of?
I've slowly kind of muscled my way into responsibilities because I just can't help myself.
Yeah. You have that. You have that.
I have that because I was a band leader, and I understand the burden of leadership as a band, and I know that things need to be delegated.
Yeah.
And it's just my personality. I need to do some stuff.
Yeah.
And if something I don't like, rather than just bitch about it, present an ulterior, put something different. Like, here's an alternative.
Right.
So I kind of took it upon myself to tackle that, and I was the mediator between Rilke, myself, and the band, and we all hashed it out. And what do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. Alex has stepped in, and really helped a lot because, like I said, initially with Brownout, it was me, Adrian, and Greg. And we learned some lessons from Fantasma because Fantasma was a lot more democratic. There was a lot more people involved. And you know, if you get too democratic, you hit some gridlocks. So with Brownout, we were like, hey, we're the guys who write the song, so we're the guys that are going to deal with this other side, like the non-performance side as well, you know, all these decisions or whatever. Adrian obviously is out conquering the world, so he's kind of on hiatus. He's still in the band,
right?
But that basically left me and Greg doing most of the legwork. So Alex came in with a real willingness to step in and help out with all that stuff. So
for better or worse,
I bet also adding a profound member like that after a few years breathes some new life into, like, new ideas, new, you know what I mean? Because yeah, I know what it's like when you're doing something for a long time and you're like,
or worse.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, like, you know, where do what can we do that's different that we haven't done that we, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And we're definitely searching for that. Like I said, in all of our projects, kind of opening the door to a lot more collaboration, inside and outside collaboration. I feel like you have to after a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Just like you said, new blood. And what's interesting to me, though, with Alex is that we've known each other for so long.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of years that we didn't play together or work together or really even see each other that much.
No.
And then it all came back through this Sabbath thing. But I think it's been super productive.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to do it.
Do you guys have a Sprinter or something that you go with the nine people?
We have a 15-passenger Chevy.
Okay. Yeah, baby.
Express that we're on our second one now. We had one from the earliest days of, or not the earliest days, but probably about 2008 up until a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
We finally got a new one. And then we rent another vehicle. So we'll pull a trailer with the van, and then we'll rent like a minivan usually.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's so many people. You know, did I ever tell you guys, when I first saw this Polyphonic Spree, all I could do was have anxiety. Like, how did they get here? Like, how do they rehearse? Like, who has to call everyone to see if they're available?
I don't want
to
be in that
on
email
Wednesday
chain.
At 8.
Yeah, the email chains quickly turn into like 300 emails, you know? And that's like in the first hour.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like we were talking about earlier, like you asked if we were, like if it freaked us out at all or anything, and it's evolving all the time, and especially now, you know, there was a time where Fantasma was our singular focus, and I never saw life outside of that really.
Right, right.
And it's the same thing here, like it's just, things change and you adapt and you learn how to deal with them. I lost my train of thought a little bit where we were going. Well,
I didn't say anything.
No. Where were we? We were talking about.
We were talking.
I was trying to tie these things in and then I got lost.
Well, we were talking about delegating. We were talking about
being in one band versus
being in one band.
So exploring the different things and possibilities while maintaining.
Delegating and all that sort of stuff. Changing things from the way that we used to do them. It's all part of this evolution. It's all part of, like, just where it's at now, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of other stuff going on. So it helps to have someone new in there and to sort of change that whole dynamic.
Yeah, it makes it like a new band.
Yeah.
What are you working on now in the studio? You got anyone in there?
Yeah, I'm working on a few different things. Actually, these last couple weeks, I've been mixing a record for Kiko Villamizar.
Okay, I don't know.
He's part of the whole Colombian contingent that's in town now, or that's been here for a while, but Superfónicos, kind of family of musicians. Kiko is his own entity. He owns a studio. He owns what was Bismo.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And he just tracked his new record, so I've been mixing that. I've been mixing some Money Chicha stuff that we're going to be putting out soon. And also recording, I decided to initiate just a bunch of collaborations. over the new year. It was just sort of like a resolution to me. I was like, look, I have these bands that I like devote a ton of time to that are my bands, our bands, but I would like to spread out this whole spirit of collaboration. So sure. I reached out to several different people, one of them being Victor Cruz, who's fairly new in town. He was based in New York for a long time. He plays with a band called Nemegata.
Uh-huh.
He's a Colombian guy as well. And I recorded their record last year that's going to come out soon. But I've been collaborating with him on some kind of Latin, like cumbia, but not cumbia stuff. And then I started tracking some stuff with my friend Daniel Villarreal, who lives in Chicago, plays with a band called Dos Santos.
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole kind of just exploring some new stuff, almost like I don't even know how to describe it at this point, psychedelic kind of. That's always the first word, psychedelic.
Yeah.
You're working with Victor too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I just mentioned. Oh, right. Yeah. So I'm working with Victor doing kind of Latin stuff. And then working with Daniel doing more kind of almost Motown-y R&B stuff. I don't know, like I'm just writing. And then we have an ongoing project, me and Alex and Greg, that we affectionately call Los Librarians, which is just getting together and
writing
and recording. The whole goal is to get together and in that one session of 3-4 hours
write, come up and with record a tune a song.
And record it.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of building this catalog for licensing or
sure,
just whatever comes up, you know.
Yeah. How often do you guys do that?
As often as we can.
Yeah. It's funny how things like that come up. This is a very sort of like off musically subject, but you know, Sheryl Crow, like that whole Tuesday Night Music Club, that really was what it was.
Right.
Like those guys getting together.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, you can sing this stuff, so let's just do some stuff with you. And then they look at that.
Yeah.
They made that first album. But those kind of things I think are really great to keep on doing.
It's almost, you got to keep writing and just for the sake of, this is what we do, right?
Yeah.
Just keep writing, keep flexing that muscle and expanding and see what else happens, right?
Yeah. You have a couple of other projects. You've been doing Laboratorio with Kerry Rodriguez.
Laboratorio, that's always a really beautiful, magical experience.
Yeah. You've done some Alex Marrero and Friends.
I've done a couple of Alex Marrero and Friends. I'm kind of re-envisioning what I'm going to do with that. I wasn't entirely super happy with what... I mean, it was fine. It got me out there. Mm-hmm. It just got me out of my comfort zone and just doing my own stuff. But I'm trying to reinvent it. I saw what that was. Now I'm just going to hone in on one aspect of it, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I got a bunch of stuff
going What's on. This new morphine?
Oh, Super Sex. Super Sex. So about 6 years ago, I'm a huge morphine fan.
Okay.
So about 6 years ago, I was like, man, nobody plays morphine songs. I love these songs. I love singing them because, you know, Mark Sandman was such a great writer and singer. So I was like, I sent out a message to a couple of friends. Do you guys want to put together a morphine cover band thing?
Yeah.
And everybody was down, and then Brown Sabbath happened.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
There's enough cover
right. stuff no, going I know that on feeling. In my world. Yeah.
So I forgot about it for a while, and I mentioned it to Josh, the Barry player in Brownout and Brown Sabbath. He's a huge morphine fan. So maybe 6 months ago, he just started bugging me. I was like, okay, just shut up. So we put it together. And we had our first show last week at Cosmic, and we're going to start a residency.
Oh, it already happened?
The first show happened at Cosmic, but we have a residency. Great, thank you. We're doing a residency the third Tuesday of every month at 1-1, early, 8 to 9:30.
So you got the third Tuesday and the last Tuesday with Sly Curtis.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know Morphine except their name and their logo, and that they came through town from time to time, and they did two nights at Steamboat in the 90s, I want to say 96 or 97.
And must have been earlier than that, no?
95?
Steamboat? Because 96, 97, I saw them at Liberty Lunch.
Really?
Somewhere around that time, yeah.
Were they playing at Liberty Lunch and then just going? Did they play two nights?
I don't remember.
Somewhere they played two nights.
That's a lot of brain cells ago.
Yeah, that was a lot of brain cells ago. Well, that's how I met this dude, was downstairs at Steamboat, like smoking weed.
Oh, wow.
And then the next night, that night after we hung out with Mark Sandman and me and my friend Einar and some other musicians, I can't remember who else was there, but he was like, hey, you guys want to meet back here tomorrow? And we were like, sure. And we did, met up with him. He was the nicest guy.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Cool. He was really, really amazing. And I produced this record for this band Canvas like 15 years ago. And we did that song Thursday.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah,
it's great material. It's a unique band. There's nothing that really sounds like Morphine to this day because of the instrumentation and the two-string slide bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super fun. So I'm really glad we had a really positive, whatever you call it. People were into it.
Yeah. Well, people miss it. He's been gone for a while now.
Yeah, he died on stage in Italy well over 10 years ago, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that was weird. He died on stage. He seemed like the kind of guy, just those two nights. He was such an, I can't begin to even say, like, what a nice guy, what a cool.
Yeah, he seemed like a really smart, just really.
Yeah, cool. I remember being like, oh, I wish that guy lived here. This would be a great guy to see all the time, you know? Back to the album.
Okay.
There's a song, the third song, Seamus.
Seamus.
That's awesome, because I always call it Seamus.
Seamus.
It's an Irish name.
I mean, that was one of my demos initially.
Okay.
And I gave it that name with just a long history of just naming demos, whatever, because I never wrote lyrics. So I just write music and then name it whatever I wanted to name it. That's how, like, the Sexican came about, which is on the first record.
Such a great name.
And then Alex, obviously wrote lyrics and vocal melody to it and stuff. And we were going to change the name to match more of what he was singing about, but then we were so used to calling it Seamus.
We both
liked
the name. Yeah. And I like the fact that you called it Seamus, because that's how I read it. That's exactly how I see it.
That's how I see it, too. It's pretty phonetic that way. That tune has some Alice in Chains vibe in it.
That's cool.
To me, melodically.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised because, when I was in high school, my friend Camilo used to call me Alex in Chains because I used to listen to Alice in Chains so much.
Yeah.
But what I get from Alex, too, is like a Mike Patton sort of vibe, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I love all that stuff. I've brought it up to him and he's been a little bit like weird about it. Like, really? Like, oh, but.
I mean, I love Mike Patton. He's one of my favorite singers, but not everything sounds like Mike Patton.
No. Like, yeah, I'm not saying it's like, oh, you just sound like Mike Patton. But I hear those overtones in there,
That was a really fun one because that one reminds me of like, I had a really hard time coming up with something for that one. And I had just gotten this effects processor. And it took me hours, and I had some wine. Finally, something happened with the effects. And I was really kind of nervous about it because it was so weird. I got to the studio the next day or a few days later, and I was going to present it to Steve. That was the first thing I was going to present to him. So I'm like, so I have this thing, and do you want me to just do it? He's like, yeah, go for it. So I did a pass, and he's like, that's perfect. I was like, okay, good.
Yeah.
Onto something.
Yeah.
So it always has like a Houses of the Holy Zeppelin kind of trippy, Bowie.
Yeah.
I really like that one. And the horns, it's funny because the horns remind me of Seamus is a Pink Floyd song. That's the first time I ever encountered that name.
Okay.
It's in the album Metal.
Okay.
And it's basically a dog singing with a over a harmonica part. The name of the dog was Seamus.
Yeah.
So when Speedy, the horn arranger, got a hold of the tune and he put those really interesting horns on it, I heard it and I'm like, dude, that sounds just like Adam Hart Mother from Pink Floyd. Have you ever heard the Adam Hart Mother suite? He's like, no. So I showed it to him. He's like, oh, wow, I can hear it. So it's this weird 70s rock conversion in my mind of like Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin trippiness. I really like that track. It's one of my favorites, actually.
Yeah, it ties in a few things. I thought of David Axelrod, like some of that real kind of cinematic, just atmospheric horns that he put on
there. Yeah.
But that song and the first one, Somewhere to Go, the vibe of those songs when I started writing them was this idea that we had for the new record, which was to transition from Brown Sabbath, with kind of a heavier record than we were used to. So that's kind of where they came from.
More of a rock over.
Right. I feel like those records are a new step for Brownout outside of the Brown Sabbath world. You know what I mean? Yeah. They are a little more riffy.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a Fill My Cup is that song that it's the one that has the ladies singing on it and stuff.
Yeah. And then the sort of New Orleans vocals.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up with that song?
That's
it really I love an album that has eclectic shit on it, but this one totally does. Like that song coming after Seamus is pretty, it's very different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, that's the Soul Supporters. That's,
Who are the backup singers?
The Pumas. Black Pumas, Lawrence Cervantes and Angela Miller. Right. And that song was just an idea that Adrian had, and it came together live in the studio. But he had an idea based on some like super rough, obscure recording,
like a New Orleans street parade kind of vibe.
Right, right.
And I think we captured.
Yeah,
that.
Totally.
Yeah, I just threw up a couple of mics, like just a couple ribbon mics, and they kind of played percussion and not really full drum kit, and we're just kind of singing into the
room. Yeah, it was very street parade kind of.
Yeah.
We were going for that, and yeah, then we brought in the vocals, and yeah, it all just kind of felt right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an Adrian contribution. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys were big Los Lobos fans for a long time.
Definitely.
And have you been friends with Steve for a while?
We have. We first worked with him on the Grupo Fantasma album, Problemas, which we started recording in 2012. We had reached out to a few different producers, and we're aiming high, frankly. We were like, I think we hit up Ry Cooter as well and had some, because we had won a Grammy on the last one. So we were like, hey, let's just... We were like dream producers.
Let's go.
Just
reach out
and see what happens. And we had spoken to a few different people, and Steve actually was very aware of what we were doing and was really excited and just had an enthusiasm right away. And obviously we knew his work. So he was the guy that we went with and had a great experience with him. And just like testament to the type of dude he is, we stayed friends. And every time we'd go on tour on the West Coast and we were in Portland, he would come out and see us and introduce us to some of his friends there, and has really become like just a great friend.
A bro.
Since then.
Yeah,
he's become a bro. So
that's awesome. Did you guys ever want to work with Prince as a producer? Was that ever on the table?
Or for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, for you guys. Yeah. Did it ever make it to the purple table?
Well, we had a couple of things that occurred that led us to believe that could happen. Obviously, unfortunately, it didn't happen. But there was one time after we played the show at part of his 21 Nights in London. So we opened the show with Fantasma, and then we did the after party with him. And it went till like 3-4 in the morning. And afterwards, we were all backstage hanging out. And I think that was really like one of the most personal hangs that we had with him, where it was his band and us, and we were all in the green room, and he was actually there. He didn't like disappear. He hung out. He didn't say much, but he hung out and just like sat in the middle while everybody was joking and having a great time, talking about the show and telling stories. And at one point, I ran into him in the hallway, and I've told this story before, and I'll just give kind of brief version, but Adrian and I thought he had left, so we went and got a beer from the bar.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And then I ran into him while I'm holding my pint.
Yeah.
And I had to hold it behind my back. I was like, oh shit, he's going to like say something, because we're not supposed to be drinking backstage. But we thought he was gone. And then, of course, this was the one time he wanted to have this like personal conversation with me. So I had to stand there with my beer behind my back. And he asked how we liked the show. And I was like, man, it was amazing. Thank you again for bringing us. And he said, now you can come back whenever you want. London like knows you now. So we're like, thanks. That's all I can think of saying, really. And then he said, now what's next is you got to write some hits. And I said, well, you're the man that knows how to write hits. You know, you got to help us out. And he said, one hit is easy. Y'all can write 10. And so that, in my mind, I was thinking, like, he wants to record with us. He wants to do something. And I remember wanting to, like, scream at that point, like, for the rest of the guys, like, dudes, yeah, want to record? Come here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I told that story to them, and nothing like really happened for a while. But towards the end of the relationship, towards the end of the last stuff we did with him, he sent us a song, and it was called "Sex and the Single Girl," and he had recorded like a demo of it, I guess. And there was no instruction. It was kind of typical sort of thing where he just sent this song, and it had a little bit of a Latin feel, like a piano montuno. So the only thing we could think of doing was re-recording it ourselves and sending it back to him. And we did, and we just, nothing ever came of it. So that's the closest.
It's funny, then it, then that just, what, he just kind of disappeared into the mist. He went on to another thing.
Yeah, it was at that point that he dropped the horn section. He started doing like a power trio thing.
Right.
And went just rock style from there.
There was, you guys were in some of these retrospectives of the Super Bowl weekend that he did, because you guys played with him that weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And I actually got hit up by a writer.
Oh, you did?
Who had hit up Adrian first, and he did an interview, then he sent him to me. And I learned a couple of things about that whole night that I didn't know, or that we didn't know at the time, because this was like the early stages of playing with him,
right?
And we had never really interacted. And the party that we did on South Beach the night before the Super Bowl, we were the band and he was coming to play with us, and we had never done that before, so we were super nervous and there was no instruction. All they told us was like, wait, and as soon as he drives up, like when his limo gets here, you guys start playing so that he walks on stage while you're playing,
right?
So we were like waiting. And it was this whole buildup that eventually we got used to, because it happened a lot, where there'd be people with walkie-talkies and on phones being like, okay, he just left the building. Like,
right,
he's
right
around the corner. He's about to get here. There's this big buildup, like, oh, shit, he's coming. But I found out from this interviewer who had talked to the rest of the band that he was really nervous that whole weekend, and he was upset as he drove up to that gig. We had played earlier. We opened for him at the Hard Rock Casino,
whatever, yeah, like, yeah,
arena or something,
yeah.
And that was the first time we opened for him, and it was really rough acoustics, you know. It was a big arena and everything, there was tons of echo, and it was the first time that I got to see him play, and I was almost in tears watching that whole show and kind of putting it together, thinking like, man, I'm here with him, like, as his guest. And anyway, it was all just like very, like, made a huge impression on us. So
yeah,
we were nervous. And then come to find out that he was nervous, yeah, and he was angry about the sound. It just kind of put it all in perspective.
Yeah. I thought it was weird. I watched that, but he did a press conference, and he played like Johnny B. Goode, and so it was really odd.
At that time?
For yeah. Them. Like, he was, yeah. It's such a strange, strange time. There was something else I was going to ask you about Brown Knot. Then you guys got the blessing. You guys have been like sort of embraced by badass elders, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've been really lucky in that respect, and we've been presented with these opportunities, and I think you know, the Prince thing was like the first thing to happen like that. And for a band like us at that time, who were still pretty much local, I mean, like, we were touring on our own, but we were very local, and I think still kind of figuring it out, that was like a ton of validation. So it gave us a bunch of confidence, and it also showed us how it's done for real. Like, hey, like this is the peak of professional performance.
Right.
And it changed a lot for us. And then down the line, we got these opportunities, like playing with the GZA from Wu-Tang,
right,
playing, you know, the Horns did a bunch of stuff with Spoon.
Yeah.
We did we got to back up, were you there with Bernie?
For Bernie Worrell? No, I wasn't in the band.
Utopia.
I missed all the good stuff. Except Ozzy.
But yeah, we were presented with a lot of cool opportunities, and I think just that initial thing with Prince really gave us the confidence to be able to do that stuff, and also be able to know how to play with someone who's like the band leader, and he's in charge, and he's the star, and it taught us how to be a real backup band, and watch those people for cues,
yeah,
and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be coming out the Tuesday before the album comes out, and the album comes out Friday, March 6th. It's called Berlin Sessions. You can hear the single Somewhere to Go now. Is there another one coming out before?
Not before.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, there is maybe, one coming out before.
Okay.
Yeah. Naeem.
Okay. Naeem. Okay, the second song. Oh yeah, that's a good song. These are great songs. Thanks, to introduce the record to people, I think.
Thank you.
The record was produced by the great Steve Berlin. The huge cast of Brownout superstars is on it, including special appearance by Anthony Farrell from Greyhounds and the Soul Supporters, and who else was the guy, that the tenor saxophone guy, Gene Centeno,
old friend who used to play with Fantasma.
Yeah. But yeah, great job. And you guys are doing a release show Friday, March 6th at 3:10, and Saturday, March 7th at 3:10.
Correct.
Yes. With Nane on the 6th.
Nane on Friday and Superfónicos on Saturday.
Superfónicos on Saturday. Yeah. Yeah. I love both of those bands.
Yeah, me too.
Superfónicos are great. Are they working on something new?
They've been working on a few different things. They've been doing a bunch of stuff with Jim Eno.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Are you friends with him?
With Jim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a great studio too.
We've done a couple records with him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so we
go way back
with him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, he gets a lot more music than you if you just listen to Spoon, you're like, "Oh, he did the Black Joe Lewis record, didn't he?" Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and did you guys? Alex, anything coming up outside of the Brownout shows at 3:10?
There's always something. There's always something.
They can find you at alexmarrero.com
because yes, you
have you.
Have
a podcast.
Have you seen it? It's all
yes,
up to date. It looks nice. You have all the info you need.
And people can find you guys at brownoutmusic.com. Yeah. And Leche House Music is your studio.
Yes.
People can find it on Facebook.
On Facebook and Instagram.
Your Instagram. Is there anything I'm missing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's great talking to you guys, man. This record is it's fucking great.
Thank you very
much. Great job.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing some shows.
Awesome. Right on.
All right, man. Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks, John.
Beto Martinez and Alex Marrero from Brownout. Their brilliant new album, Berlin Sessions, drops this Friday, March 6th, and they are celebrating with release shows this Friday, March 6th, and Saturday, March 7th at 3:10 ACL Live right here in Austin, Texas. They're also doing an in-store at Waterloo Records on Thursday, March 5th at 5:30. I want to thank Alex and Beto for coming by. Man, what a great record, man. I'm serious, man. Get out there and check this out. It's also available on vinyl. That's what I was given. Alex brought me a vinyl about a month ago when they got him in, and I've been listening to it, and I love the record. You can check out the new singles, Nine and Somewhere to Go. They're both available right now. New singles from Berlin Sessions, the new Brownout album. Find them at brownoutmusic.com. All right? I want to thank Alex and Beto for coming by. Great dudes. Great, great dudes. Hey, gang, no, don't forget, when you're out there checking out brownoutmusic.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, anywhere you find podcasts. New show every Tuesday and every Friday. All right? Enjoy the rest of this song, Nine, from Brownout, their new album, Berlin Sessions, out this Friday, March 6th. Have a great week, gang. Let's get down. Nine coming out.